Chapter 14. The Operation of the Nebraska State and Local Sales and Use Taxes. By Loretta Fairchild and John F. Do. The structure of the Nebraska State and Local Sales and Use Tax has been described in Chapter 3 of this volume. In brief, the state sales tax was introduced in 1967 and applies at a rate of 4% to all sales of tangible personal property for use or consumption and not for resale, except those sales specifically exempted. In addition, a small group of specified services is also subject to the tax. The use tax applies to purchases from outside the state. The principal sales tax exemptions include food, medicines, and prosthetic devices. A few miscellaneous items, motor fuel, subject to motor fuel taxes, farm seed, seed, fertilizer, and related items, and industrial machinery and equipment purchased by firms entitled to exemption under the 1987 incentives legislation. Other industrial equipment is taxed, as is farm machinery and equipment. Sales to government and various charitable and other organizations are exempt. The food exemption, enacted in 1983, replaced a system of credits against income tax representing tax paid on food purchases. Finally, the tax typically yields about one-third of state tax revenues. In addition, cities were given the power to impose local sales taxes by 1969 legislation and the major cities, and a number of smaller ones, but not including a substantial group of medium-sized cities, have done so. The typical rate is 1%, but Omaha, Lincoln, and Bellevue use a rate of 1.5%. The local taxes are collected by the state, and the base is the same as that of the state levy. Liability for taxes based upon the place of delivery, not location of the vendor. Administrative organization. The sales and use tax is administered by the Nebraska Department of Revenue, headed by a tax commissioner appointed by the governor. The organizational structure is functional. There is no separate sales tax division, as in some states. Thus, field service personnel and auditors handle all taxes. There are 10 divisions in the department: administration, including the tax commissioner, deputy commissioners, controller, and personnel. Tax policy, 8 attorneys and accountants for preparing regulations and legislation, 4 attorneys for docket resolution. Legal, 7 attorneys for docket resolution and reviewing legislation. Audit, 40 auditors for all tax programs and 3 office audit specialists. Of approximately 55,000 annual audit hours, 69% were devoted to sales and use tax audits in 1986. Field services, 38 field service agents for enforcement, collections, and taxpayer assistance. Research. Administrative services, including data processing, with 9 systems analysts. Revenue operations. Property tax. Charitable gaming. Personnel. All personnel in the department have been covered by the state classified personnel system since 1983, except for the tax commissioner. However, in practice, the personal assistant to the commissioner does change with administrations. Effective September 1987, the commissioner is authorized to create up to 3 discretionary, non-classified positions, subject to funding availability. A second deputy commissioner was added with the change of administration in early 1987. General tests are not administered to applicants except for information processing skills. Applicants' qualifications and experience are reviewed individually. The Department of Revenue negotiates with the State Personnel Office on the classification and job description to be assigned any position. Compensation is determined by the Personnel Rules and Regulations, effective July 1, 1986. In perhaps 10% of such negotiations, the Department of Revenue receives its second choice, and in less than 1% of cases it is entirely displeased with the classification assigned. While most employees are Nebraska residents, there is no residence requirement, and upper-level positions are often advertised in the Wall Street Journal. On-campus recruiting for auditors takes place at all Nebraska colleges and universities offering a degree in accounting. State affirmative action targets are used in hiring decisions. In particular, one goal is to raise female participation at the manager, professional, paraprofessional level from the current 36% to the goal of 40%. Minority hiring, especially of blacks, is also targeted. The department hopes to hire two blacks in 1987 to return the department to a 6% minority representation. However, no special pay incentives are offered to targeted groups. Turnover among auditors is about 30% per year, since 3 years' experience allows them to qualify for a CPA certificate. The overall turnover rate is about 7% per year. Qualifications for auditor include a bachelor's degree in business administration with 24 hours in accounting, including auditing, tax accounting, and advanced accounting. Approximately 50% of current audit staff have qualified for the CPA certificate. Three qualifications for field service revenue agents include a college degree in business, or 3 years of training and/or experience in general business. Experience may substitute for training on a year-for-year basis. Previous customer service experience is also considered. These requirements are higher than those in many states. Salary levels are fairly competitive, see Table 14.1, and the department has little difficulty in getting qualified persons. A nationwide survey of starting salaries for college graduates indicates that the average offer in accounting was $21,384 as of January 1987 and $21,120 as of January 1986. The Career Placement Office at University of Nebraska Omaha indicates that for 1986 graduates, the average offer from regional accounting firms was $20,600, while local companies offered starting salaries from $16,000 to $18,000. A proposed salary upgrade for field service revenue agents will probably take effect in the 1987-88 fiscal year, when an attempt will be made to further upgrade the educational level of revenue agents. There are five regional offices, see Table 14.2, each with field service agents, but auditors are permanently based only in Lincoln, Omaha, Norfolk, and Scottsbluff. None are based out of state, but in total make 25 to 30 out of state trips a year. Only the Omaha office has two managerial positions. Two of the other four regional offices are coordinated by audit supervisors, the other two by a special agent, Revenue Agent Ivy. Revenue agents are assigned directly to a regional office when hired. Agents work in specific counties, but these assignments are deliberately rotated. All Department of Revenue employees are hired on an original 6 months probation basis. Subsequent dismissal can occur only for cause. Training for new auditors includes a 3-day orientation to the tax laws and regulations. Training is then handled one-to-one in the field, with a senior auditor on the case acting as mentor. Since field service personnel are not hired in groups, classroom training is not feasible. CDP equipment. Data processing for the Department of Revenue is provided by Central Data Processing within the Department of Administrative Services. The Department of Revenue operates its own prime computer for property tax, with Marshall and Swift software for land valuation, but all other information processing, including that for sales tax, is centralized. The mainframe is an IBM 1391. The last major upgrade from an IBM 3081 occurred in late 1985. Maintenance is handled by Central Data Processing. Even though CDP makes all hardware decisions, the Department of Revenue feels that the equipment and storage capacity available are more than adequate for their needs, and that shared jurisdiction creates no significant problems for them, as it does in many states. The Department of Revenue is charged for computer usage at the same rates as all other departments. These rates are designed to cover all of CDP's direct costs and overhead. Since 1985, the systems analysts in CDP assigned to the Department of Revenue also do work for the Departments of Education and Health, but this has not created any significant problems. The Department of Revenue has 10 systems analysts on staff, and exerts considerable influence over information functions, establishing specifications for software, testing procedures, training users, and controlling the information and security. Approximately 40% of one analyst's time is devoted to sales tax work. Security is the overriding priority for the system, so there are no outside lines for terminal access. Field offices have had direct access with CRTs for more than 10 years, but they allow inquiry only, and no updates can be made from outside. Relatively few printouts are made for sales tax purposes, except for the monthly listing of non-filers. Data entry is online, directly to magnetic tape. Only limited editing takes place during data entry. Once the data are on tape, calculations are made to identify errors, which are corrected online by personnel in revenue operations. No sales tax data are received in machine-readable form, though some WES2 and IRS data are entered this way. The last major redesign of the master file took place in 1975, for the sales tax, in 1973, for withholding, in 1979, for personal income tax, and in 1986, for motor fuels. Minor, patchwork changes are made regularly. A redesign of the business master file for all taxes is in process. This will allow more flexibility on audits requested, for example, and is a high priority with the audit division. However, progress on this project has been limited by staffing availability and the higher priority given to making changes, as directed by the legislature. The operation of the tax. The details of the registration of vendors and processing of returns can be summarized briefly. Registration. Each new vendor must file an application for a permit. Under each tax program, it is illegal to sell at retail without a permit. There are two types of vendor permits, sales tax and retailer's use tax, for out-of-state vendors collecting use tax. A single application form, Form 20, see Appendix 14A, is used for withholding, sales, retailer's use, lodging, motor fuel and cigarette taxes. A separate application for each location is required for the sales tax permit, with a fee of $10 for each location. There is no fee for retailers' use tax registration, since these firms are essentially voluntarily registering. Firms not required to register as vendors must register for consumer use tax if they accrue any use tax liability. As the applications are received, they are edited for computer entry. There is no screening. As to whether the applicant requires a sales tax permit, except to see if the firm has previously held a sales tax permit, so as to ensure that no firm receives more than one number, and to see that no back taxes are due. The permit is entered into the business master file, which is a computer record. A single number for all state taxes is issued. The numbers are simply issued sequentially. The permit forms have the numbers printed on them. The applicants are asked for their federal employer or social security number. These are entered into the file, but not used for the state number. The firms are coded by industry, using a simplified 2- and 3-digit business classification number, and by location, county, and city. When a firm quits business, it is supposed to so indicate by checking a box on the form on the final return. If it does not, it is discovered in a delinquency check. New registrants are provided with an information guide, Information Guide 84-6, see Appendix 14A. The total number of registered sales tax vendors, 63,418, as of May 1986, has changed little in recent decades. The number in 1969-70 was 52,036, in 1979-80, 61,049. The number per 100,000 population, about 400, is higher than the nationwide figure of 350, but comparable to that in adjacent states. During 1985-86, 8,239 permits had been issued and 8,159 canceled, for a turnover rate of 13%. This is somewhat lower than the national average of 16%, but these figures vary widely, from 3% in Mississippi to figures over 25% in Washington, Texas, Ohio, Arizona, and Nevada. These figures on new permits include changes in ownership and form of organization, but not address or name changes. The number of firms filing in recent years is shown in Table 14.3. Organizations or businesses seeking exemption on the basis of the nature of their activity must file application for exemption on Form 4, Charitable, etc., or Form 5, Common Carrier. Copies of these forms are found in Appendix 14A. Returns. The return forms, Form 10, see Appendix 14A, are addressed, including the permit number, by the computer, and mailed out on the L0th of the month. A non-machine readable paper return form is used, which basically calls only for gross sales, net taxable sales, and sales and use tax due, and includes separate spaces for city sales and use taxes. No detail is required on non-taxable sales, but a worksheet, see Appendix 14A, is provided on which the firm is expected to list this information and have it available. For firms operating at more than one location, combined reporting is allowed upon application, and a separate form is provided. Separate return forms are provided for business consumer use tax reporting. Form 2, see Appendix 14A, and individual consumer use tax filing. Form 3, see Appendix 14A. Currently, three reporting intervals are used for sales tax, monthly for the larger firms, quarterly for most of the remainder, annual for firms with very small total taxable sales. As of December 1986, there were 30,276 firms reporting on a monthly basis, 24,608 on a quarterly basis, 5,859 filing annually. Currently, firms with sales use tax liability over $1,200 annually must file monthly, those with tax liability between $1,200 and $900 annually must file quarterly, and those with tax liability under $900 a year annually. These dividing lines are changed from time to time. The computer system indicates the return interval for each firm. The system has great advantage in ensuring continuous flow of tax revenue from the larger firms, yet minimizing the paperwork for the smaller firms and the revenue department. Most states now use a system of this type. Table 14.4 shows the number of filers by amount of tax due. Processing. All processing is done in Lincoln. Returns are due by the 25th of the month following the tax period. The information is entered into the computer system by the 4th or 5th of the next month. The standard operating procedures, as described below, are followed. The mail is opened and sorted by tax period, hatched into groups of 50 or so, and the returns validated by online computer, noting the return, date of return, and amount of money. The checks are separated, coded with the basic information, microfilmed, and sent to the banks. The returns are edited by video units in preparation for entry of the information into the computer, and the computer checks the arithmetic. The returns are then microfilmed and go into dead storage for 4 years. In general, it is rarely necessary to go back to the original return. If copies are required, they are reproduced from microfilm. One peculiarity of the system is that only 2 months of information is kept in the master file. Earlier information must be obtained from microfilm. The existence of an entry into the computer for the appropriate period is the basis for the computer determining whether or not the firm is delinquent. The general system is comparable to that of other states and appears to operate efficiently. The primary question to be raised for consideration is whether facilities permitting information for a substantially longer period should be kept on the computer master file so that it can more easily be made available. This longer period will, of course, add to the department's total cost of operations. Delinquency. The tax is due by the 25th of the month following the taxing period. Non-filer notices are generated by the computer following posting on the 2nd to the 5th of the following month. delinquent firms in the monthly filing status which filed and owe tax are shown the balance due on the next month's return when it is mailed. Quarterly and annual filers who owe tax receive a computer-generated form letter indicating the balance due by the 10th or 12th of the month, see flowchart, figure 14.1. The Field Services Division receives a computer-generated list of all current delinquencies by the 15th of each month, plus a list of any past delinquencies, broken down by region and county. Copies go to each regional office. The revenue agent will recheck each firm's status by direct entry to the Lincoln file using the remote terminals to verify that the delinquency still exists. The agent then has 20 days to make the first contact, usually by phone. In 1974, field service switched to phone power from automobile power, and the firm has 10 days to respond to this initial contact. 15 days after the initial contact, which allows for posting, the agent rechecks the account, telephones the firm again, and a second notice, standard delinquency form letter, is sent. If the taxpayer does not respond within 10 days, a determination of the liability, deficiency determination, is made and sent by certified mail. Agents try to spend at least one day per month out in the field and make a personal visit to delinquent firms. The firm has 30 days to respond to the deficiency determination before it becomes an assessment and statutory lien. If, however, the department believes that the firm is likely to leave the state, the special agent manager will issue a jeopardy notice by certified mail, and a statutory tax lien arises when the liability is assessed. Within 10 days, the firm must pay the entire amount or post bond. Bad checks are automatically sent to the bank twice and then treated as a balance due with the same penalties assessed as for a non-payment. If action is to be taken on the lien, it must be filed in the county where the firm is located, regardless of where any assets might be located, with the registrar of deeds for real property and with the county clerk for personal property. A levy source is usually located before a lien is placed, often employment or bank accounts. The department also deals with tax delinquencies by the seizure and sale of both real and personal property, if sufficient equity is available to satisfy the liability. Before a firm's sales tax permit is revoked through a formal administrative hearing to close the business, an informal conference is held with the taxpayer to seek to resolve any non-compliance. If non-compliance still continues, criminal prosecution is considered and a formal revocation hearing is held in Lincoln. Operation by a retailer without a sales tax permit is a misdemeanor, but non-remittance is a felony. If the firm wishes to continue in business, it can reapply for a permit, pay a $25 license fee, and post a security bond of 3 to 5 times the monthly tax liability. A bond is not normally required unless there has been a history of payment problems. An average of 10.3% of the firms in the total sales tax file is initially delinquent. Each will receive a computer-generated notice. However, this figure includes returns with calculation errors which result in a balance due. Approximately 25% of the figure is a duplication of the balance due and non-filer notices. Without this duplication, 7.7% would be the average delinquency rate. This compares with a national average of approximately 10%, with figures as high as 20% in a few states. Only 12 states have figures under 8%, the lowest being 5%. Of the 7.7% figure of delinquents in a typical period, 21% respond to the initial computer-generated notice, 44% respond to the first revenue agent contact, 20% respond to the second revenue agent contact, 11% respond to a personal contact, tax lien filing or assessment, and 4% move to the tax lien, levy, or revocation phase. Thus, nearly 2/3 of the delinquencies are cleared by the first two steps, and only 4%, 0.28% of the registered firms reach the lien, levy, or revocation stage. The delinquency rate has changed little in the last decade. In the past, the highest delinquencies occurred among small grocery stores. Now that the chains dominate this field, the worst offenders are restaurants, bars, and lounges. Any small business that is undercapitalized is likely to become delinquent if cash flow problems motivate the firm to use sales tax funds as working capital. While the delinquency rate among businesses in rural Nebraska has increased since fiscal 1983 to 1984, the largest dollar amounts still are in Lincoln and Omaha. Prompt follow-up is emphasized to prevent losses from growing. For example, if December sales tax is delinquent, by the time contact is first made, 2.5 months sales tax has become outstanding, so the revenue agent requests the January payment as well to prevent delinquencies from continuing. For major itinerant sales, e.g., state fair, entertainers, a revenue agent goes to collect the tax each night. Penalties and interest. Failure to file is subject to penalty of 10% or $25, whichever is greater. If fraud is discovered, the penalty is 25% of the amount due, or $50, whichever is greater. Non-filers forfeit the 3% collection fee, or are assessed $5, whichever is greater. If a firm files, but fails to pay, the penalty is 10% of the tax owed, or $25, whichever is greater. Interest is charged at 14% per annum on the unpaid tax due, but not on the penalty. There are no extensions or grace periods granted for payment or the assessment of interest and penalties, but the tax commissioner has the power to waive all penalties, and negotiation of waiver can be used as a settlement tool. It is quite common that 50% of the penalty will be waived on the first offense, but generally no waiver is granted on subsequent violations. If the situation is somewhat ambiguous, some effort is made by the Revenue Department to settle without litigation. It should be noted that prosecutions must be handled by the county attorney or attorney general, who may not be interested in pursuing such cases. Field services attempts to arrange installment payments of deficiencies if this can facilitate collection. The civil penalty for misuse of resale certificates is $100, or 10 times the tax owed, whichever is greater. Criminal penalties can also be imposed since sales tax evasion and presentation of a false document are felonies. However, it is often not cost-effective to pursue these minor abuses, and field services had assessments of penalties pending on only 12 resale certificate cases as of March 1987. The last step prior to revocation of the sales tax permit is for the firm to enter a voluntary corrective action plan worked out with field services. Approximately 60 cases per year of permit revocation are formally initiated, usually for continued non-payment or for failure to file over a period of several months. Generally, half are resolved without revocation. After revocation, if the firm wishes to go into business again, there is a reinstatement fee of $25, $50 for subsequent reinstatements. Operating a business without a sales tax permit, or continuing in business, after it has been revoked, is a Class 4 misdemeanor, subject to a penalty up to $500 per day. The principle of derived liability is used so that individuals occupying positions of authority within the corporate structure and who have responsibility for financial decisions may be held personally liable for sales tax due by the corporation. This helps prevent individuals from re-entering business under a new permit when they have been involved in previous cases of failure to pay or file. Audit. The audit division is truly integrated, with auditors responsible for all taxes, withholding, corporate, personal income, sales, motor fuels, except charitable gaming. There is very little specialization among individual auditors, and assignments are rotated. The state audits for both state and city sales taxes. Selection of accounts for audits. Selection of firms for audit is largely based on expected dollar return, concentrating on the largest filers, industries with a past history of problems, and the most profitable firms. Much of the revenue recovered at audit comes from manufacturers who did not pay use tax on machinery, equipment, and supplies. Efforts have been underway for some time to make audit selection more scientific by establishing a set of characteristics which could be used to identify productive audit cases. Efforts to date have been hampered by the database itself, since the classifications by business code are not entirely accurate. firms frequently list federal SIC code instead of the Nebraska code, make errors in listing, and change their product lines without correcting this listing. Only 2 months of data are available online. Out-of-state firms registering voluntarily have thus far not been subject to an audit selection program that targeted them. Various states have experimented for decades with improved approaches to audit selection, with pioneer work being in California and Michigan. In recent years, regression and factor analysis have been utilized, especially in Texas and Tennessee. But the results to date have not been outstanding. Audit coverage. The relatively small number of auditors allows coverage of only 0.5% of firms collecting sales tax to be audited annually, though the Revenue Department has a goal of auditing 1-2% per year. All audits are basic, not superficial. Tax dollars recovered per administrative dollar spent on auditing run $10 to $1. More than $10 million in sales and use tax were recovered in the 1985 to 1986 fiscal year, or about 28% of revenue, a relatively good figure by comparison with other states. Given the data of allocation of audit time between sales and other taxes, Nebraska effectively has the time of 28 sales tax auditors. Thus, there is one auditor per 2,250 accounts, compared with a national average of 1,066, 1981. Studies in various states suggest that one auditor per 1,000 accounts is roughly the optimum. Thus, the audit staff in Nebraska is less than half the optimal figure. Doubling the staff should increase income by several times the cost. The present audit coverage, 0.5% of the accounts per year, compares to a 2.3% national average, and 4% or more in 11 states. The Nebraska figure has typically been at the low end of the coverage side. Only 8 states, 1981, were auditing less than 1% of the accounts annually. Currently, many firms in the state will not see an auditor once in 50 years, if at all. Audit operation. Assignments for audit can be made either by the head of the regional offices or in Lincoln. An audit team, under the direction of a senior auditor, consists of 2 to 6 auditors, depending on the size of the firm, with 2 or 3 being average. The team takes with them an audit packet, made up in Lincoln, which contains microfilm copies of 3 years of the firm's history on all tax programs and some tax returns, usually the corporate income tax. These histories indicate most transactions, including returns filed, late payments, penalties, interest, and amended returns. As of April 1987, refund claims processed after October 1, 1985, are included in the audit packet. Since 1985, the audit division uses 4 portable compact computers in the field in addition to calculators. The computers are standalones and are not connected by modem to the main computers, in an effort to prevent hackers from entering the system. This means that a firm's data must be entered manually. However, this use of spreadsheets still allows a great increase in speed and accuracy in calculating and accumulating invoice information monthly and calculating taxes due, interest, and penalties. It is hoped that the audit might eventually become paperless, using direct computer transfers of histories instead of the current awkward microfilm re-entry process. The audit team also takes copies of the audit manual and the revised procedure statements. The well-done audit manual is a large, easily updated, 2-volume compendium in 3-ring binders. The first volume contains policies and procedures, including personnel policies, reference materials, including classification codes, technical directives from the commissioner, and statutes for each tax. The second volume contains detailed descriptions of audit procedures for each tax. A major revision of the audit manual is underway, with completion expected in 1987. Auditors keep detailed records of time invested, by type of tax, and by procedural steps within each tax. This data is then entered in the computer by office staff. Auditors are provided detailed programs of procedures specific to each tax. Preliminary steps include the review of the firm's past records, verification of statutes of limitations for each program, and a documented telephone conference with the firm to make preliminary arrangements. The statute of limitations is generally 3 years for sales tax, if the returns are filed, and 5 years, if no returns have been filed. At the beginning of the audit, an initial conference with the firm is necessary to present the auditor's identification, obtain necessary documents and work papers, coordinate work schedules, and allow the auditors to become well acquainted with the firm's operations. The auditors will then submit a time budget to the regional audit supervisor for approval before work is begun on a specific tax. Following detailed review of the records and sales and used tax returns filed, the audit findings are discussed with the firm at the post-audit conference, during which an attempt is made to settle all questions of fact, and payment and protest procedures are explained. Each program step requires written comments from and the initials of the auditor involved. The auditor's notices of deficiency and the final audit report are approved by the senior auditor on the case and the supervisor, and these reports are sent to the regional offices. However, the notices of deficiency must be signed by a manager, so those from the Norfolk and Scottsbluff offices must be sent to Lincoln for this approval. All audit reports are reviewed with the Tax Policy Division before the notices are issued, and the Lincoln office does a follow-up review to ensure consistency among regions. Interest and penalties are charged whenever additional tax is due. The appeal procedure allows the firm 30 days after receiving the notice of deficiency to file written protest. An independent hearing officer from within the Department of Revenue will then conduct a formal hearing. If agreement cannot be reached, the case will go to district court and eventually to the Nebraska Supreme Court. For sales tax, perhaps 6 to 12 cases per year require formal hearings, of which half will go to court. The department's estimate of average time to resolve an audit protest is about 6 months. Principal errors found in audit. Some of the principal errors revealed by the audits include the following. 1. Most companies are not reporting out-of-state purchases for use tax, and there is no systematic way to ensure that they do so. 2. There is abuse of resale certificates, a copy of which is shown in Appendix 14A. In the late 1970s, a major auditing thrust sought to force firms without resale certificates on file to contact major customers to obtain copies of the certificates. Now, however, if the firm has a resale certificate on file, an assumption of good faith use is made, and there is no further check on the legitimacy of the certificate itself, since the certificate places the liability for misuse on the customer. The degree of fraud as distinguished from negligence involved in the use of exemption and resale certificates is difficult to assess precisely. Retailers are not held liable for misuse if they accept exemption or resale certificates in good faith. 3. Questions arise in the interpretation of other exemptions, including manufacturing and processing equipment, rolling stock of common carriers, farm insecticides, particularly when applied in grain elevators, the treatment of the printing industry, contract work, and with regard to local sales tax on the place of delivery. Other aspects of operation. The Revenue Department issues the bulk of research as summer interim studies, which address issues of particular interest to the tax commissioner, governor, and legislature. These studies are very thorough. Monthly and annual reports of returns for sales tax by county and city are prepared, but they contain only the statistics without analysis, and are not widely circulated. See Appendix 14A. Annual Revenue Department reports contain detailed breakdowns of revenues by source, but little analysis is provided, and these reports are generally delayed for up to 2 years before reaching the public, given the low priority of this project under rather severe budget and personnel constraints. Costs of collection. A 1986 Department of Revenue estimate of the cost of administration of the sales tax, $3.5 million, calculated as a residual. This is equal to about 1% of total sales tax revenues, slightly higher than the national average of 73.1981. But many states show low costs because of inadequate control. vendors are compensated by an amount equal to 3% of the first $5,000 of sales and use tax collected plus 1% on the excess over $5,000, in addition to by being allowed to keep breakage. The difference between the amounts collected under the bracket system and the amount due the states. The state charges cities 3% of the revenue collected for administering the city sales taxes. Business perceptions regarding the sales tax. Businesses in general indicate no major complaints about the structure and administration of the sales tax. Firms which operate in a variety of states consider Nebraska a relatively low tax state with tax administration systems that are relatively easy to deal with. They also find Nebraska labor unusually dependable and productive. Firms appreciate centralized filing for the city sales taxes. Administratively, however, they find the frequency of changes in the sales tax burdensome. They would prefer point of sale to point of delivery in assessing city sales tax, because even zip codes do not provide a completely accurate guide as to which deliveries should be assessed municipal sales taxes. As the number of Nebraska cities levying a sales tax increases, problems escalate, because the total surpasses the number of categories available on most packaged computer software, and is especially cumbersome for firms which still use manual processing. Firms also believe that the response time of the Revenue Department in resolution of audits and appeals is much too long. Some firms maintain that such cases typically average 1 to 1.5 years in resolution, although the Department of Revenue's estimate is 6 months. This also underscores the need for more personnel within the Revenue Department. Specific areas of concern over sales tax for certain industries include the following. A. Is the industry classified as service or manufacturing? And is this treatment consistent across all kinds of taxes and development incentives? One example is the production of videos, still a controversial area. This has been considered a service business, with firms charging customers sales tax only on the component parts of the product, e.g., the videotape, but not on the labor involved in production. But there is extreme complexity involved in distinguishing among parts of the process. Thus, there is some belief that tax should be assessed on the entire amount of the invoice, classifying the operation as manufacturing $25,000 for the video versus $12 for the videotape. The issue is further complicated in that some customers sell the final video product to their dealers, while others distribute it free of charge. If the industry is to be considered manufacturing, then it need not pay sales tax on some of its equipment, which it did under the service classification. Parallel cases exist for blueprints for architects and negatives for photographers, both of which are still considered to belong to the business rather than the client, and therefore not subject to tax. This problem also exists for advertising firms. Those that have established agency status with their clients have been paying sales tax on items purchased and not charging the client sales tax. The state argues that if they have not established an agency relationship, they should have been purchasing under a resale certificate and assessing the client sales tax for the entire product. These advertising companies object to acting as the collecting agent, since they see this as a significant administrative expense. The issue is ambiguous and not well understood by the firms in the industry. The interpretation of what constitutes a component part of a product. This affects a wide variety of industries, including video production, cited above. A video production firm which owns the equipment to produce the tapes and keeps all master copies claims to be at a tax disadvantage vis-a-vis a competitor which directs the creation of a video but contracts with another firm for the actual production, although the equipment is taxed in either case. This problem is particularly difficult for the printing industry, with regard to prepress plates and the labor-intensive processes that go into their construction. These items are retained by the printing company and not sent to the client, who is frequently located out of state. The whole issue of sales tax for the printing industry is the subject of a 1987 summer interim study, and at least one court case is pending on the subject. Further audits of printers have been suspended by the Revenue Department pending clarification. One related technical correction was passed in the spring 1987 legislative session. Previously, if the customer provided raw materials for processing, the fabrication labor performed in Nebraska and constituting a substantial portion of the sale price was subject to sales tax even if the finished items were shipped to customers out of state. Now, regardless of whether the processing firm or the customer supplies the raw material, the interstate commerce exemption applies, and no sales taxes due on the fabrication labor on all sales sent out of state. See packaging. For a firm shipping perishable items, mostly out of state, is the dry ice an integral part of the product, and thus exempt, or is it an item not sold to the customer, consumed in the process of shipping, and thus taxable? D. Areas of potential concern. 1. Mail order sales. Firms facing significant competition want out-of-state mail order firms to be required to register and collect use tax. However, Nebraska companies which are engaged in mail order shipments fear reprisals by other states which will add significantly to their administrative costs in attempting to collect and remit multiple state and city sales taxes. 2. Possible sales tax on services which are mobile and could move out of Nebraska. A variety of industries are concerned, including telecommunications, broadcasting, advertising, aviation repair, and laboratories. Conclusions on operation of the sales and use taxes. The general impression of sales tax administration in Nebraska is that it is highly professional, with well-trained staff, modern procedures, and minimum political interference. More specifically, 1. The data processing system in general is adequate, with a minimum of problems. 2. The general procedures of registration, handling of returns, processing, and the like are satisfactory, apart from the information retrieval system. 3. The delinquency experience is typical of that found in comparable states, and the procedures for dealing with delinquents and the penalties are satisfactory. 4. While the operation of the audit system is satisfactory, the number of auditors, and thus the annual audit coverage, is grossly inadequate. The state has well-trained and supervised auditors, it simply lacks an adequate number. 5. Information provided the taxpayers appears to be adequate. 6. While no great dissatisfaction with the operation of the tax is expressed, some industries, for example printing, broadcasting, and advertising, complain of ambiguities. There is considerable feeling that completion of audit cases is too slow, and that too often assessments will be retroactive even in instances where there was uncertainty about how the tax should apply. Recommendations. 1. The number of auditors, audit time available for sales tax, should at least be doubled to bring the coverage in line with that regarded as more or less optimal. The result will be a substantial increase in net revenue. 2. Continued attention should be given to selection of accounts for priority in audit. 3. A strong effort should be made to clear up ambiguities in the industries in which there is greatest uncertainty, particularly printing, broadcasting, and advertising. 4. Consideration should be given to having a greater number of months of data online for quick retrieval of information. The present microfilm system appears cumbersome,